My name is Michael Coates. I'm a former firefighter, but I'm also a former soldier. And it's the stories from the individuals within this military community that I'm desperate to document. In this episode, we change things up, and I speak with a former professional football player. We speak about life in North London, anxiety, dyslexia, and his love for the game. We also talk about his alcohol, cocaine, and gambling addictions. A brutally honest and open conversation, a gambling special. Paul Merson, this is Declassified. Paul, what was your first childhood memory?
I would say one of them. I was brought up in a place called Holsden in northwest London. The house around the corner, Protestant's house, and I didn't know at the time, but every time the window just got put in every week by someone would drive past and put a brick through it, and I just couldn't understand. I was like, used to get scared, like, because I used to think, my God, what's that? Like, constantly just keep on smashing the window, constantly, every week without fail. And I understand now, because I, you know, as I've got older, I know the situation, like with obviously Celtic Rangers. But at the time I knew, I thought, you know, I hope that ain't going to be our house next week.
And is that as you was a little one?
Yeah, as a little kid, you know, that was one of my first memories of living in Holsden, and obviously being able to play in the streets, play football, and then go to the park till just before it got dark. You know, my kids can't do that. They can't do that. That's not allowed nowadays with what goes on in life now. But before, we were allowed to do that, and they were good. They were memories that, you know, that for all what kids get now, they would never have that back.
Yeah, those childhood memories, that freedom.
Yeah, and they won't have that because of society.
Was it just you, or did you have brothers and sisters?
I got two younger brothers and a younger sister. But yeah, my cousins used to live across the road, so we always used to go down the park. Yeah. Always, and play football on the street. Used to use a lamppost and one of something else to make a goal, or we use that as the cricket stumps in the summer. Yeah, it's weird, really, because I can remember that, like, as I'm talking to you, like it was yesterday, and what it looked like. But something 2 years ago, I wouldn't really remember. It's weird. Yeah, it is.
But I think there's the that kind of enjoyment of living, especially that innocence of living.
Yeah, and then no fear or no, you know, it was just happy-go-lucky. You know, it was one of them, no worries in the world. You know, I look at my kids now and I think, I wonder what your brain's, you know, like, what you're thinking.
Yeah.
But they don't think anything, do they? Just go out and have fun. They don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. What was it? What was the house like you brought up in?
We lived in a big house, but we lived upstairs in the house. So as you walked in the front door, the old lady who lived downstairs, our front door was the bottom of the stairs. And then you walk up there, and then, yeah, I'm trying to think of the plan of it now. But yeah, we all slept together. I had a plastic sheet for, I must have been till I was about 10 or 11. I constantly kept on wetting the bed. You know, that was a big thing. I wet the bed. I was dyslexic. I had a speech impediment when I was very young. People will probably say I still got one now. Dyslexic. It's a hard, you know, like hard. Weren't good at school. The only thing that got me through school was being a good footballer.
But you know, all those things, you know, wet in the bed, like, would that be like anxiety?
Yeah, I think, yeah, my dad used to like go and play cards. He used to love playing cards, my dad. You know, and I always remember, I always waiting for, would he come home, you know, when my dad come home, he played cards through the night. Love playing cards, do you know what I mean? And I think that was sort of a situation. I always wanted to be with my dad, always. I struggled with, like, not being with my dad, yeah.
Did you feel safe?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I love playing football and being around him, and do you know what I mean? And then, like, yeah, my mum used to get me to ring up the card score. I remember used to ring up the card score and say, my dad there, and I could hear my dad in the background say, tell him I'm not here, do you know what I mean? And, you know, at the time, it's like, but as time went on, I'd done it, do you know what I mean? Like, I've had that before where, you know, I've been in a pub and someone said, oh, it sounds like Mrs. rung up, you know what I mean? I'm not here. And it's weird how it works, how it...
Did you think he had a problem then?
No, he loved playing cards.
Was it more?
My dad liked playing cards. Yeah, my dad liked a bit. Dad liked a bit. He did like a bit, but my dad just stopped. Just stopped. Like my dad, like now, I have a fiver or a tenner and easy come, easy go. He used to hate it when I gambled. Mm. Hated it. You know, with a like, yeah. He was like, "What are you doing? You know, what are you doing?
Why do you think at an early age, and you would, you know, wet in the bed and feeling like anxious like that?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, I nearly died when I was a kid. I don't know if that makes any sense. You know, I was in hospital for a long time. My mum said like first 3 months or so of my life, like in hospital because, you know, something was wrong with me. I don't know. I was just very insecure kid. So insecure, you know, like, I mean, when I got older, when I got to 14 years of age, I went out for a girl with a girl for a month and I didn't even kiss her. I was scared to like lean forward, and if she turned her head, the rejection, I just wouldn't be able to handle that. That was, my head would always doubt me, you know, you're not good looking, or, you know, why would she want to kiss you? You know, all them thoughts.
Self-doubt.
Yeah, all their self-negative, like all bad thoughts. I never had good thoughts in my head.
Was your family supportive? Was it
a
positive environment?
Oh, yeah. My dad took me everywhere to play football. If it wasn't for my dad, I wouldn't have been a footballer. My mum would take me to speech, therapy. Mm. Yeah, I mean, they took me everywhere to play football. Yeah, it was. We got what, you know, not every, of course, my dad was a coalman and my mum worked at Hoover and places like that and made stuff at home, you know, in the days when like you'd work from home and make like whatever it was, ribbons or something like that to get paid. So it weren't, you know, our treat on a Saturday was like hot dogs. Yeah. If my dad come home, like from cards or somewhere, he would like bring us like a quarter of sherbet with a licorice pipe. You know, that was major treat.
Yeah.
Like major treat.
So a low income family growing up.
But it was lovely. It was loving. Do you know what I mean? It was nice. You know, as I said, it weren't one of them where you weren't with your mum and dad. Do you know what I mean? He was always with me. Even when we went to like the working man's club down the road called the Crown Hill, you know, we all went.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It was a family, like we all went and bingo was on. And I remember like tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree when the old band come on with their red silky shirts and black. You know, I remember all that. And it was all happy stuff. And then there was a sweet shop at the top of the driveway called a lady called Ruby used to have. We run up there and get our sweets. So it was like happy times. It weren't like, you know, but I always wanted my dad there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And schooling then, what was that like?
No, I wasn't. It's weird really, because my boy was upset today because he doesn't like the school dinners and they force him to eat his dinners. And I had that at school. That was my first thought at school. It was like the teacher always forcing me to eat my dinner. I didn't like eating. I wasn't eating very much. Like even on Sundays, my mum would give my Sunday dinner and eat it on my lap because we didn't have a dining table. And if they went out the room, I'd throw it out the window, you know, make out of it, I've eaten it. So today was a bit weird with my boy because that was like memory of like when I used to be like that, fear of the dinner lady's going to be putting pressure on me to eat my dinner.
And that's his little one.
Yeah, he's six, he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, you know, so that was a bit of a thing. So I remember that when I was a kid. I mean, my auntie was a dinner lady as well. And I remember she'd always be shouting at the teacher, leave him alone.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what, in them days, it was different. I think, you know, not like it is now.
Mm.
You know, it was different. I mean, the teacher would like proper, like, make you. It was a bit like Matilda.
I was just thinking in the cake.
Yeah, that was a bit like
shouting your name.
Yeah, yeah, not shouting my name. Everybody's doing their laces up.
Yeah,
yeah. Or they've gone. They're playing out in the playground.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And then academically, then
terrible. Yeah, big regret of mine. If I'm being honest, real regret. Didn't do anything at school.
Is that because of application or was it just your?
I just wanted to be a footballer. I wanted to be a footballer. Concentration levels were, being dyslexic was hard. You know, it was constantly so slow. My handwriting is mustard. Like, people, if anybody sees my writing, they're like, oh, my God, you've got the neatest writing I've seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I have to concentrate when I write, so I can't rush because I can't spell. So because I can't spell, my writing's so neat because I take my time.
Mm.
You know, so it's quite interesting like that. I mean, I used to be in class and I used to have to, like, write what I was going to write down in the air, like, with my finger in big letters to see it. I mean, it's weird how you see... You know, I see names now when I'm on Soccer Saturday and they're all mumbled up. I can't pronounce them. It's even now at 53 years of age.
Well, so was it because you said how strict the teachers were?
Yeah. So, no one knew at the time with dyslexic.
So,
yeah.
That's what my point is. So was you treated differently? Or was you...
I was sort of treated like, I'll just get on, you know.
Yeah.
Get on with it. Do you know, just, yeah, they weren't like... There wasn't, like, long as I didn't play up, you know, I turned up at school.
Was you enthusiastic about it?
No. No. I like maths. I like geography, you know, but I think maths was a thing where it come through where I'd be able to work a bet out, a 10-team accumulator to the penny, you know what I mean? So my maths was quite good like that with that. And geography, I felt I was interested in geography, the capitals of the world and maps, that rocked my boat.
Do you get enthusiastic about things that you're interested in?
Yeah.
And did you back then?
Yeah. Like geography, something like that, or you get something like that, I'd get interested. If you said to me, oh, you've got to write a 10-page essay now on something, A4 paper, I just, no.
Yeah.
Just haven't got that. Just didn't have that.
When did football come in?
Oh, even from, like, early age, from my dad took me... I mean, there's a picture of me on the beach with a nappy on kicking a ball at 2. Do you know what I mean? So it's always been football. And that's what it's always been. You know, I just loved playing football. I loved it. But then that nearly stopped because I started getting palpitations, started getting anxiety attacks on the pitch. My nerves took over. And I'd have to come off the pitch.
When did it get serious?
11, football? 12. The series, 11 or 12. Football never got serious. It weren't like now. Like Freddie now is like, he trains at like Chelsea, Fulham, Arsenal. He's 6. And it's like...
Really?
Yeah.
6 years old?
Yeah. And it's like the training's good. It's like bang, bang, bang. Like then with me, it wasn't like that. You know, it was like, just go up the park, play football. You might play for a Sunday team. You know, now it's different. It is much different. But when I got to 11, the old the anxiety attacks kept on hitting me then. And then I'd have to come off the pitch. I couldn't breathe.
Age 11, 12?
11, I couldn't breathe. I had palpitations and I was like, I couldn't catch my breath.
But were you good?
I was good, yeah. I was a good player. Oh, yeah, was good.
Was you the best on the pitch?
Yeah, yeah, one of them. I would have been. I was one of them, yeah.
So was it self-induced pressure?
Not really, because it was no one made you go out and play like you got to do this or that. It was,
not someone I'm talking about. Was it internal? Was the pressure internal to make you have a panic attack?
You know, I don't know. I don't know.
Because you worry a lot.
Yeah, I worry a lot. It might be because I worried a lot, you know, and I wanted to win but I never really, you know, I never really looked at it. I just thought, I'm just nervous kid. Because I never ever thought I was, you know, I was one of the best players, but I never ever thought that.
Mm.
Yeah, I never ever thought, I never ever thought, oh, I'm the best player, I'm going to go out and I'm, you know, I'd always doubt myself.
Mm.
But that was not good. I mean, I remember going to the doctors with my mum. And the doctor said, stop playing football. Just literally like that. Stop playing football then. And it was only over time that I learned that it's not going to hurt me. Do you know what I mean? It was like, just calm your breathing down. And I still got that when I played for Arsenal. Even when I played for Arsenal at 17, 18 years of age, I still got that.
You know when you're in the game, 12, 13 years old, were you concentrating on the game and nothing else?
Yeah, I didn't know anything else.
But I'm on about actually on the pitch. Was you in the game, or was you worrying about external stuff?
Question. I don't know when I've ever been in the moment.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if you see the documentary in the other week, but I just found at the start of the documentary when I watched it, and we've just won the league at Anfield, and I'm like spaced, like I'm not even there. Like that scared me. That scared me. It was like my eyes, like I'm just, everybody's having fun and I'm not there. You know, I'm thinking, I'm more worried about what's next. It's never been in the moment. And that might be the case. That might be the case. But at 12, 13, I wasn't the brightest kid in the world. You know, I wasn't. And so feelings wise, I didn't even know what a feeling was.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? If someone, it's only when I went into a treatment centre and someone gave me a piece of paper with about 300, about 60 pictures with feelings on, I didn't even know what they were. Do you know what I mean?
Would you be, as a young, and I'm not going to dwell on being, but think about teenage life before we get to the kind of signing, you know.
Yeah.
Were you impulsive? Would you do things rash? Or would you calculate about what you did? Would you do daft things? Would you do boisterous things on an impulse?
No, I was straight. I was a Chris Tavray. I was a straight, like, safe.
Mm.
Like, I say Chris Tavray is one of my favourite cricketers, but he was safe. He wouldn't give his wicket away. And I was like that. I wasn't one of these, like, oh, let's go and, like, I was scared of being naughty. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I was thinking that when you said it.
Yeah, I wasn't one of them, like, oh, let's go and be naughty and all that.
Were you scared? I don't want to put words in your mouth, so you can just say no. Were you scared to let your parents down, especially your dad? Would you be worried?
On football, I would have said, yeah. Because put a lot of work, you know, yeah. Yeah, I would have. Yeah, there would have been pressure on that. But my mum and dad were getting nothing out of it. Do you know what I mean? It weren't like if I done well, they would get anything, you know, it was only in pleasure. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think they would have got a lot of, you know.
Yeah, a lot of pleasure, but pleasure. It's not like, it wasn't like they would get a house or anything like that if I played well, or, you know what I mean? So it wasn't like.
No, it's more, yeah. I meant like, you know, would you let them, would you feel like you were either letting them down or achieving for them in a positive way, like just by scoring the goal,
of
course, or getting selected.
Yeah, I would think, yeah, I always try and make my dad happy, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, but he would never put pressure on me, you know what I mean? He wasn't one of them who went, right, you've got to play well today.
It was your dad.
He was just like, and he'd always pick everybody up, like a couple of lads who couldn't get, he would go, and we'd go and pick my mates up, and you know what I mean? It was like, I think football, if you like football, football's the best thing to bring friendships together, like, and mates, you know. Yeah. Like, we went on holiday last week, and Freddie, who's six, when he was 3, 4, I could see him in me, like, a bit shy, a bit. But now he started to play football, he just goes and does stuff now. Like, he'll go and play with the kids, and it's nice. Before, he wouldn't leave my side. He was a bit like me with my dad.
Yeah.
And I think now he started playing football, he'll go and do stuff, which is nice.
So sports are a level, especially.
Sports is there, but it brings people together, and it makes, you know, it makes friends, and I think that's a good thing, you know. And he's got good friends now in football.
What year did you sign for?
I signed for Watford at 12.
Yeah,
signed for Watford at 12, and I loved it. I had a bad injury. I smashed my knee open. I cut my knee open at 11. Just moved over to Norfolk to a council estate. My mum and dad still live there today, and a piece of iron, we were one of the first houses to move on, one of the first families, and a piece of iron went in my knee, and it cut my knee open, and it, like, it was touch and go, like, it was bad. And then we went on holiday to a caravan, and I was the wicket keeper because I couldn't move, and I, being like, want to win everything I do, the ball went up and I went for it and I fell, and my knee come open again, got rushed to Chichester Hospital, and a doctor sewed it together again. He put cat gut in it. You know, the what you use for a tennis racket.
No, I don't know that. What is it?
Catgut. You know what a tennis racket? What you hit the ball with a tennis racket is called catgut.
Oh, like, right, okay.
That's the string.
The string. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what they sewed my knee up with. Yeah. So my knee can like people go, oh, Paul Merson. Like if you talk to anybody about football, they go outside the right foot because I used to kick the ball out. But it's only because my knee can literally just turn.
You can
all
manipulate.
It can turn all the way round, sort of thing, because it's on a thing. So that happened, and then lucky enough, I started high school and I started late because I couldn't go to school. So you imagine that insecure, you know, shy kid. And then at 12, I loved it at Watford. And at 14, Arsenal coming for me.
Mm.
My dad's a massive Arsenal fan. All my family are massive Arsenal fans, bar me. And they made me sign for Arsenal. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was 14. A man called Bill Graves come around who found me. He sat down with my dad, and my dad wanted me to sign. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I remember writing down, signing it, and I run upstairs crying my eyes out. I was gutted.
Because you were leaving Watford?
Yeah. I thought I had a chance at Watford. I thought, there's no way I can play for Arsenal. I was, you know, insecure. Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. Oh, 100%. That was my fear. I'm scared.
Because you think that, oh, Arsenal, perfect. But actually to achieve football, sometimes it's...
Yeah, I just thought Watford, I was comfortable. I don't like change. You know, I go on the same holiday every year. You know, I'm like, my wife goes mad. Oh, well, why don't we go somewhere else? But I don't like, and that was the thing. Watford was nice. It was comfortable. And I thought I had a chance. Mm. And then to go to Arsenal, new surroundings, different players, start all over again, a bit like going to a new school. And lucky enough, that looking back now, it was the best thing I ever done. Best thing. But at the time, I didn't want to do that.
Mm. Did you settle in?
Hard. It was hard. I didn't play at the start. Like, the players were better than me. And that's weird because I was the only one who went on and made it. But, yeah. And then at 16, they give me a YTS. They didn't even give me an apprenticeship. Like, I was very small and skinny. They called me and they said, we're going to give you a one-year youth training scheme. If you don't get any bigger in the next year, you ain't making it. No chance. I was like probably 7 stone wet through.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, really. Like, you, honestly, I see pictures and like really thin, really thin, skinny, and didn't look like a footballer. And then that was it. Then that's when it all started.
Did you play? The reason I say it, because I remember being 17, I was in the army and I would only play rugby league with kids. And then at 17, I started playing rugby league with adults and getting banged about.
Yeah.
And in the space of 3 months, I just shot up. I must have put on 20 kilos or something in 4 or 5 months. Did you, in the YTS, were you playing against bigger people and was it a bit more?
I wasn't even really playing a lot, but you was training every day.
Yeah, sorry.
See, that was the thing. We were training every day, like, so going from school, training Mondays and Thursdays, like in the evenings, to going every day, then I shut up, you know, maybe. But it all started then. That's when it all started. I remember getting my first wage pack and I'd done the whole lot, done it all.
What do you mean?
Well, I got £100 a month. I got a youth training scheme, £25 a week. My mum got £140 a month for looking after me. And I remember my first wage pack, me and my mate went and got our wages at the bank. And in them days, you had to go to the bank to get your wages. It wasn't like, put it on you. There wasn't even a phone then. And I remember going in there and they were queuing up. It was packed, the bank was. And it was, yeah, everybody went to the bank on Friday to get paid. And I got my £100 out and I thought I was a millionaire. I'd never seen £100 in my life before. I mean, that was like serious money, like. And my mate, where's got his out? I said, what are we doing now? I thought he was going to literally say, we're going to go Oxford Street or Bond Street shopping. And he went, I'm going to cross the road to the betting shop there. And I went over there and I walked in, like walking onto a spaceship. It's a different world. Completely just took me out of myself. I couldn't believe a shy boy, like insecure, just changed just changed me. It was like weird. It was like, for that 15 minutes, I'd done it all in the end, my money.
100 quid in 15 minutes?
In 15 minutes. 15 minutes, done the whole lot. Never had a bet in my life before. Never bet.
What did you feel like afterwards?
Fuck, devastated. I mean, at the highest level. I mean, the one thing with gambling, and I've learned over the years, and that from that 1 minute then till the time I stopped just over a year ago, there's no quicker come down than gambling. You know, you can go out and get drunk or take drugs and you're up at high, 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 and you come down slowly. Gambling, there's no middle. You are up here, you're flying along, everything's great, and bang, 5 seconds later, everything's gone. And I mean gone. It's not like, and it's like, shit, gone. In like that quick. And there's no, and that's what it was like. It was like, I'm up here and everything was flying. It was great. And it all gone. And I was on the way home on the train. I thought, what am I going to tell my mum and dad? What am I going to tell them? They think I'm coming home with £100. That's like, you know, where we live, that's a lot of money. £100. I've got to go work now for the next month, no money. And I remember I got onto the estate where I live because I had 21 stops on the train on the way home. And I thought, what am I going to do? And this is at 16. This is how clever you get when you're gambling. I got my face and I scraped it along the wall. I scraped all my face and I scratched all my face. It was all bleeding. And I run indoors and my mum went, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I said, I've just been mugged on the train. And she believed me and she gave me her 140.
She gave you 140?
She gave me her 140 because I...
Did Arsenal pay her the 140?
They give her 140 for looking after me.
Right.
But they... She give me it.
She give it to
you. Because she thought I'd worked all hard for a month and I got mugged on the train.
Can I ask you just to set the picture? Are you in like Arsenal tracksuit here or are you in just civvy normal clothes?
No Arsenal tracksuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like, it's Friday because we have to...
Arsenal tracksuit, bookies, because, Arsenal tracksuit.
Yeah, 20, on the way home. Back. Yeah, scraped my face along the wall, all cut, running. I got mugged and my mum felt sorry for me and gave me my money.
When was the next time you gambled?
Literally when I went back to work again on the Monday.
With the 140?
Yeah. Then you thought, oh, I'll get money. I've got money again. That's where it started. It started then. It was like people go, oh, you know, it's gambling starts somewhere. You know, it started at £5 and £10 bets. Do you know, it weren't like straight in the £100 on it. It was £5, £10 bets. It was like, bang, bang, bang.
What were you gambling on?
Horses and dogs. That's all you could bet on in them days. There was nothing else to bet on. At 5 o'clock, the betting shop shut. That was it, 5 o'clock.
So there was a restriction. So was it a case of just getting these bets on as quickly as possible?
Yeah, that was it. You know, there was nothing else to bet on. As soon as 5 o'clock come, the betting shop shut, that was it. You know, or whenever the last race was at 5:15, 5:30, finish.
And that was UK? It wasn't like
that was UK.
Hong Kong, America and all that.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no phones.
Yeah.
No phones. There was no, you know, nothing. That was it. Bang. You can't bet on anything else.
Were you in between everything? Because you're going into the Arsenal system. You're getting good money for a kid that's come from no money.
Yeah.
Are you, when you haven't got any cash, are you thinking about gambling? Or are you thinking about football? Where is your attention here?
No, at that time, it was starting to take over. Like, concentration levels go out the window. Like, all you're concentrating on is where I'm going to get money from to have another bet. You know, what am I betting on next? And that's what it was like. You know, football was good because the dolphins in your brain, and you don't need a lot to get them going with gambling, is... then football would carry it on. So I had that job where when I stopped gambling, the football give me
the high.
Give me the high. So it wasn't like I had a job that gave me massive highs, but then when the football finished and I come off the pitch, it was like, what do I do now? Boring. And that's why I just kept on chasing that high. I constantly kept on chasing that football high. And the more I got that high, the bigger the crowds, the bigger the games, the bigger the thing, become the bigger the bets, the bigger the case, the bigger the chance.
I'm not going to dwell on cash. When did you start making kind of, I don't know what the right word is, in a significant amount of money compared to what your parents would have earned as, on the same age? When was you
earning? I'm quite slowly. I'd say that. I mean, in 89, I started off £100 a month, and then I went on to £125 a week, which is a big jump.
Mm.
And then I went to £300 a week. So I was, when I won the league in 1989, which was a big thing to win the league, at Arsenal, I was on £300 a week, and I was on £525 for playing and winning on top. So the incentive was to be in the team and win the game. So then it all started like that. So which I personally think should be happening now, in a way. You know, I think players should be getting, if you want to give a player £100,000 a week, which is not a problem, you should have £33,000 a week, £33,000 if you play Saturday, and £33,000 if you win the game. There's your £100,000. That keeps you hungry.
So you was incentivized to train hard to make the team.
To make the team and to win. Yeah. I was getting nearly double more money for winning a game and playing in it than what my wages were.
You said about 5 minutes ago, you said you want to win everything.
Yeah.
Were you incentivized through winning to make the team better, or was you incentivized to get the cash?
No, to win. To win. I love winning. But that was the buzz. That's a big buzz. You know, there's no buzz in the world, and that's what I've chased for the last 36 years. There's no buzz in the world for a footballer to score a goal.
Mm.
You know, and I've tried everything.
Because it's instant, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's the noise, it's the crowd, it's the faces, you know, people, 20, 30,000 people singing your name. It's like, it's unexplainable. But when you come off, there's people that come off and they go home and they get on with their life. And then there's people like me who want that all the time. And that's why I gambled. So everything I ever gambled, I gambled everything. Every single penny I ever had. And I mean that to the state of 2 years later, we won the league.
What year is that?
91. And I just bought a house in Wheat Hampstead, a 4-bedroom house, brand new. We just won the league. So we've won it 2 out of the last 3 years. I'm playing for England. Like, I just won PFA Young Player of the Year a couple of years before, which is, as a kid, as a teenager growing up, it's probably the highest accolade you could win, you know, for everybody in the league to vote you as the best.
Oh, that's a peer-to-peer thing. Yeah,
everybody. Yeah. So every player in the country votes for the best young player in the league.
Shit.
And I won that. And I'm sitting at home with no carpet, floors, brick floors, you know, like that grey stuff, concrete floor, yeah. And people go, "Oh, you're greedy, you gambled for greed." It's not, because I wasn't gambling to win silk carpet. Gambling.
Well, you had the cash anyway.
Yeah, I had it, and I chose to gamble. You know, I lived in an apartment in Birmingham, and I would jump in. Long time ahead, but I lived in a flat in Birmingham for about 8 years and never bought blinds because I chose to gamble instead of buying blinds.
So just the money to buy blinds is nothing, but you'd have rather have spent that little bit, the 10 quid from IKEA blinds.
Oh, yeah, I've never ever, you know, even when I used to go into a shop and see a pair of trainers, I'd think, no, fuck, I'm not paying 100 quid for them. You know what I mean? But I'd walk out the shop and have £10,000 on a Lithuanian under-20s basketball match, like that. But I can't justify going and buy myself anything.
You know, when you was in your flat with no carpet, what was...
House, that was the house.
The house, beg your pardon. Yeah. What was your... did you ever go into a depression?
I think I was always depressed. I was never like... I was like a clowny, like, you know, like when I was on my own, I was like just gone.
Sad.
Yeah. And when I was around people, I'd be like the laugh and joke at a party.
Do you like to please other people?
Yeah, always. always wanted to please other people, always wanted everybody to like me.
Because it's strange, isn't it? Because the gambling can remove that. We're not there yet, I suppose, but just the gambling.
Yeah. Oh,
is that selfish gambling?
Oh, as time goes on, and gambling gets hold of you, like it did, like as time went on, because then I start losing more than I can afford to lose. Okay. At the start, when we're talking about now, I'm losing what I've got. So, but as time goes on, it's the most self. You don't care about anyone, and I don't mean. And I'm not that. But that's sad when I say that, because that's a million miles from me.
Yeah.
But that's where the addiction takes you.
Yeah, and I think I was just seeing the contrast between you wanting to please people from this loving
and then,
family, and then
to not give a shit.
Yeah. The 1993.
Yeah.
You did FA Cup, Coca-Cola Cup final against Sheff Wednesday.
Yeah.
I remember being in my social housing house, I was 10.
Yeah.
I used to have hundreds of pictures. I used to get match and shoot.
Yeah.
I was big into football when I was that age. And I had pictures of you and Alan Smith would have been and Waddle and Hares. I had all these pictures of. I used to cut them all out and stick them all on my wall. And there's an image of you with your mop head and you were doing the booze.
The drink thing.
I'm moving us forward to come back. What was the thought process in you doing that then? And what do you, when you see that image now, what does it say?
That's where I was. I loved it. I loved it. At the time, the ego, it was like my mates were in the crowd. It was like we're going down the pub. You know, that was it. I mean, that I just scored one of my highlights of my career, scoring a goal at Wembley in a cup final is like one of the ultimates. You know, I played in the FA Cup final that I always dreamt of playing in 3 months after that. And we drew the game and I was like, we can't go out. There was no interest of like winning. I would have rather tossed a coin. I'd rather toss the coin that day after the game.
You had to play again, didn't you?
We had to play again on Thursday, so that means we couldn't go out Saturday. So I'd have rather just tossed the coin. That was me. It was like all or nothing. Even then, with the game, all or nothing. Just get the game out.
Did you ever? One of the reasons why I said that, I was 10, and I remember seeing that image and thinking, And so I can't remember who explained it to me, but he was saying that it was alcohol that he was referring to. And I used to think, but he's a footballer, why is he doing that? And did you ever feel any responsibility as a role model, as a professional athlete?
You know what? Jules Graham always used to say, every week he'd call me in, he'd go, who you are, what you are, and who you represent. Who you are, what you are, and who you represent. So give yourself have a bit of pride in yourself, you know, who you are, what you are, you're a professional footballer, and who you represent the Arsenal, you know, and I never got it. And I only just get it like the last year or two. And as I say that now, like I say the Serenity Prayer when I'm in trouble or, you know, I don't feel right. When I say it slowly like that, I understand what you're saying. And I should have had pride in myself. I didn't. I hate myself. I didn't like myself. You know, people used to come up to me and go, oh, you're a great player, you're a legend. I used to think, you just knew what I was like. You know, I don't come home at night, go out, I come home days later. You know, you don't know what I'm like. I used to hate myself with a passion. Now, my first wife stabbed me. And she's not a bad person. She's a good person. She stabbed me. Because she said, who's it going to be, drink, gambling or me? And I laughed. I laughed and she stabbed me. And I'm like, that's what addiction does. Horrible.
Yeah, I was just thinking, who laughs at someone when they say, drink, gambling, or me? And I just laughed. I mean, just laughed. And I mean, he stabbed me in the hand, and my hand was over my face. I mean, and she's not like that. Mm. And that's what it does. It's evil. It's evil, like how it gets you, like it wants you on your own. That's the addiction saying that. Like, that's the addiction saying, like, on your shoulder or in your head, yeah, get red, be on your own. If you're on your own, then you can do whatever you want. And that's what it does to you. It gets you on your own. It wants you on your own. You know, if I talk now, if someone rings me and I don't pick the phone up now for a couple of days, I know I'm drifting away. I know it's getting dangerous again. I know it's getting dangerous.
Have you been around good people? What's your social support network?
Yeah, like? Good people. Staying out. I don't go in bet. I don't look at betting. I don't go in betting. I don't go in pubs. People say to me, "Oh, you come to the pub," or like, you know, it's a saying. Go into an hairdresser's every day for a week. By the end of the week, you're going to have an haircut. You will, and it's the same if you sit in a if you sit in a pub. By the end of the week, you're having a drink. What's the point in being in there? So you're in there for a reason. It might not be consciously or conscious knowing it, but you're going in for one reason. That's in the end, you're going to do that. Gambling, I the best thing that ever happened was blocking my phone. I got an app on my phone called Game Ban, which that stops me putting any single betting thing in my phone. It will block it. I mean, I think it's £26 a year. I mean, it's the best £26 you can ever spend. Because that's my phone's a walking casino. It's 24 hours a day. Yes, you can sit at a bus stop. It's just the rules, the betting regulations were in 2005. These phones weren't even invented. They weren't even about, you know, so that's why it's got to change. But the one thing I've always learned and I've seen over the years, addiction wants me on my own. It wants me on my own.
So when you was around... George Graham.
Yeah.
When you were on George Graham, was he a mentor? Did you look up to him?
Petrified of him.
Yeah.
Oh, well, everybody was. I'm not exaggerating. He was hard. He was like, he ruled with an iron rod. He was like, every grown-up player was petrified of him. And petrified.
And did you respect him?
I respected him till I'd had a drink or a bet.
And then,
like everything else, as soon as that happened, it all went out the window. You know, it was weird because the drink and the gambling, then I found the drugs. You know, I went in a pub one night, finished a game, and I went to meet a mate of mine over in Boreham Wood in a pub called The Mousetrap.
So still in Arsenal?
Yeah, this is 1994. Like, I'm flying along still. I'm playing for England. I mean, like, playing for England, and I go to meet my mate in a pub in the Mousetrap in Boreham Wood, and I go in there. It's the wrong pub, but it's lively. The pub's lively, and everybody's a lot of Arsenal fans in there buying you a drink. And I thought my mate would meet me there, or I was in the right pub. An hour later, and then a couple of people said, "Do you want a line?" This is 1994. It wasn't around then. It wasn't rife like it is now. Do you know what I mean? It was. And I went, "Nah, I'm all right." I'd been around it before. I'd seen it with cousins, boyfriends and things like that. And I was like, no. And I left there that night and I knew I was going back next week. I knew I was going back. That whole week, I knew I was going back.
What for?
To do it.
So you knew in your head?
Yeah, I knew that day that I left that I was going back next week.
So was you pissed up in the pub?
Oh, pissed up, and I still didn't have it.
So you had this, you know what we call it, willpower, or you will, short term, then you knew.
Yeah, but as soon as I come out, I knew I'm going to.
Was you thinking about it all week?
All week, and I remember I played at Everton away, and I chipped Neville Southall, and we won the game, and I come home, I got off the coach, and went straight to that place, straight to that pub, straight to it, and for 11 months, I took it from about January till November, 10, 11 months. I've never seen something bring me to my knees so quickly.
Oh.
I mean, I was so addictive to it. It was, I mean, the people I was doing it with were like blown away. They were like, "Oh my God, calm down, calm down. It's like, you only need one or two. And I was like, I couldn't get enough.
Was you taking it midweek or just on?
Midweek, I was taking it indoors on my own. Ooh. Indoors on my own. Like literally watching telly and then going to the toilet when I was in the house with my wife and doing it. I was buying like grams of it. Like I was going on a Saturday, I'd go to a nightclub called Middlesex and Hearts over in Stanmore Way. And I'd turn up there with flip-flops on and a pair of shorts. And I'm playing for England, like playing for Arsenal, which was one of the biggest clubs in England, without a doubt. And I'm walking round the bar, like someone's let me in, like the bouncer had let me in. And I'd be walking round. In them days, people used to dance. I don't know if they do now, but dancing. And I'd be going up to people and I'd be going, you got any gear? And they'd be looking at me like, I go, do you for sure?
I mean, you were one of the most famous footballers in the country.
Yeah. And I'm going around and there's no phones. No one's got a phone. No one can say anything. Yeah. No one can film it. And then I get some stuff and I drive straight home again. And I sit indoors and I pull the curtains and it was like...
Oh, you would just go...
Oh, yeah. That. Just go and get and then back home. Yeah.
You didn't go drinking for the night.
No, I go home and like I drink indoors.
Is that pathetic? Is that... The addiction still is
that the addiction wants me on my own. Don't want me around people. If I'm around people, people are going to go, wait there, Paul, you shouldn't be doing that. You've got the best job in the world. You shouldn't be doing that. But the addiction wants you on your own. It wants you going home. It doesn't want you out. You know, it doesn't want you around good people.
So as we're speaking, so there's three addictions now
you're
dealing with. Alcohol, gambling and cocaine.
Yeah.
And this is a spiral because you feel... bad for them, let's say the gambling.
Yeah, the more I gamble, the more I lose, the more I drink. But the more I want to drink, to stay drinking longer, I take the cocaine.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? When I went to the nightclub, I'd get the stuff, but before that, I'd be out all night.
Mm.
Literally all night. I mean, then I've got the postman in my pocket as well. Got the postman to say, don't deliver any statements to my house. I've just bought my wife a present. I don't want to see the statement. So I'd have to, postman would meet me at the bottom of the road with a lorry load. Sorry, I'd never get any statements put through.
Like bank statements?
Or credit cards. I'd have had credit cards and just caned them. So now it's just constant now. It's like, it's just the spiral. The more I gamble, the more I lose, the more I drink to get me out of the way I feel. And the more then I take the drugs.
Did you care?
Of paranoia at the highest level, not really. I don't know. You know, you've got a great job, you're getting paid, so the money's always coming in. You've got like a 4-year contract, so it's not like you're sitting there thinking, "Oh my God, it's going to dry up tomorrow."
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And that's where sometimes you're fortunate, but the paranoia. Like I used to live behind gates. There was two houses, and I'd drive home sometimes, and someone would be parked on the road outside on the main road. And I'd literally pull up and I'd get my dad to go down and just see what they wanted. Like, I'd be that paranoid. It used to take me 10 minutes. Like, I live 10 minutes from the training ground. I live the nearest to the training ground out of everyone. It used to take me an hour to get to work.
Oh.
If a car was behind me for more than 10 seconds, I'd pull over. I thought they were going to kill me. Someone was going to kill me.
So irrational paranoia?
Yeah, at the highest, yeah. Like proper light paranoia at the highest level.
Not paranoia, paparazzi's going to get me.
No, no. Like someone's like, yeah, someone's going to kill me. And like for no reason. No one was after me. It weren't like, you know, I wasn't in debt or anything at the time. It wasn't like I'd got money off loan sharks. It was like the cocaine had done that to my head.
Just you were falling into poor mental health.
Yeah, poor mental health, complete paranoia. I'd drive to work and think, like, it got like I just want to pull over in front of a lorry. I just want to pull the car into a lorry and let the lorry hit me head on. That thought would go through my head every day.
So 1995?
94, yeah. That year in 94, constantly.
You were suicidal?
Oh, constantly. At the highest, like constantly wanting to always. The only thing, it was just felt like something on me that would say, what about the driver? That was the only thing. What about the driver? That was it. Honestly, it was the only thing that ever came into my head was, how would the driver feel? I've got all this, right? I'm playing for the biggest club in the world, or the biggest club in England, or one of the biggest clubs, successful at the time, playing for England, everything's great, I earn good money, and I want to kill myself. How do I go to the club in 1994 when mental health, like, people didn't talk, you know, like how fortunate we are today? I get locked away. They put me in a, they section me. That's what's going through my head. I'm thinking, how can I feel like this when I have the best job in the world? I earn great money. I play for England. You got all the accolades and you're doing and thinking the way you think. How can I go and tell someone that? How are they going to understand how my head is? My head's telling me that they'll just lock me away.
Mm.
They'll just say, you got to go. There's something wrong with you. You're not right in the head.
And was the fear of being locked away or was the fear of losing everything?
I would say both. Both. I'm not a closed space person. Claustrophobic. I mean, the biggest thing I think in the end, like a lot of the times when I stopped drinking and gambling and things like that, my fear of prison. Like, I'm petrified of prison. Like, from a young age, even if I watch programs, I like, whoa. Do you know what I mean? I can't. Yeah. It's just a massive fear of mine.
So being trapped and imprisoned, is the addiction at this point, is it like being in prison?
You know what?
Is it trapped? Are you in
trapped? You're trapped, but you're not, if you know what I mean. You're trapped in a way. But it ain't like I've never. Thank God, I've never been in prison. Thank God, and I pray that I never do. But I would take my thing over prison.
Mm.
And sitting here today, yeah. I would take my, you know, I would take that. My uncle, who's passed away now, used to say, "You're better off being skint as anything than being in prison."
Did you ever feel like in that time, 94, did you ever feel like you were a victim?
No. I didn't even understand it. I just thought I was greedy, always wanting more. You know, I got the best job in the world. As I said, playing for one of the biggest clubs in England, playing for England. I'm greedy. I'm a weak, greedy, not a good person. Not a nice person. Don't come home at night. Come home when I want. Yeah. Not, and that's the thing. Then you stop, you come down, or you lose all your money, and you go, I'm not a nice person. My self-worth goes out the window. My self-esteem goes out the window and you can't be asked to do anything. And you sit there and you think, you know what, the best thing to get out of this, to have a drink, have a bet, take some drugs. And it starts again.
Mm.
And then that ends again and you go, I don't want to feel like this. What gets me out of feeling like this? Have a bet, have a drink, have a gamble. And it's like being stuck on an old record player.
Mm.
It's literally starting. And when you don't know, and this is, as time's gone on now, this is 94. When I went and see the club and said, I'm struggling here. I'm struggling. I've got, I'm taking cocaine and my heart was like, I felt my heart was going to come out my shirt once on a football pitch. And I went and see the club the next day. And I said, I'm struggling. And I went in for drinking drugs. The gambling was irrelevant, because that's not gonna harm your performance.
Mm.
You know, so no one's interested in that. Do you know what I mean? No one's interested. I mean, this is how. I don't know what the word is. I don't like using mad. I'll go ill. This is how ill I was. We're sitting in Sweden or one of these Scandinavian countries in the July of 94. So this is, I started in January taking drugs and I'm like, you know, I'm like taking it, like I can't get enough of it. And we're sitting around a table in Sweden or Norway on pre-season, and all the lads are chatting, and Lee Dixon says, a mate of mine works for the paper and they have a massive story on a player. They're just waiting for it to break. They have a massive story. Not once did I think it was me. Not once. Not once. I didn't never sit there and think. I just thought, I wonder who that is. Not once. He didn't know it was, but that was, it was me.
Mm.
It was me. But I didn't, that's how ill I was. I didn't even see it. Didn't even see it was me.
And was it the cocaine?
Yeah. 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 It was the cocaine. Obviously, someone's rung someone and they just kept on, people ringing. When people keep on ringing all the time, there's no fire without smoke.
Mm.
Well, there's no smoke. They're not just shooting on telly. So, but yeah, I mean, and then I went into treatment for that, for drinking and drugs. And the day I come out, I remember going in November, I had to meet the FA, and I met a counsellor called Stephen Stevens. It was an unbelievable counsellor, unbelievable. And I sat down with him and he went, right, you're going to do a 6-week programme at the Priory in Southampton. I said, yeah, but that's Christmas. He went, yeah, you'll be in over Christmas. I said, I can't. Sorry. No way, I got kids. I love Christmas. I'm not, no, I can't. He said, well, I'm going to be strong with you. He worked in Albuquerque. He'd worked in like some places. And he said, I tell you now, I sit in now to this day. And if you don't come in now and you want to have Christmas, I don't think you'll be around in 3 Christmas times, if you're lucky. And I thought, shit. And I went in. And lucky enough, I got out Christmas Day just to go home and see the family. But yeah, that hit home. He said, you don't come in this Christmas, you'll be lucky if you see another 3, if you get to 3 more Christmases. That's how bad I was.
Tough love.
Yeah, and that's how bad I was. Like, it wasn't, you know, I just thought, oh, but he knew.
Did, you know, we talk about performance, like, you know, drink and alcohol affecting your performance. When do you think you were at your best on the pitch?
When I weren't drinking and gambling at Aston Villa.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
That's where you were.
Yeah, that was the best football I ever played.
Did you enjoy it the most then?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, and Portsmouth, I love Portsmouth. I love the year I had at Portsmouth because it was the moment. Like when I got promoted, I can remember it like it was yesterday. I lived it. I was in the moment. But Aston Villa, I wasn't drinking, I wasn't gambling. That was the best football.
Oh, you weren't gambling up?
No, Aston Villa, I didn't gamble. I didn't gamble.
What was that, mate?
I don't know. I stopped. I don't know. I just went through a phase. Was I happy? I like my football. I'd been divorced. Gambling wasn't as bad. I was gambling, but I was earning big money.
Mm.
I was earning massive money. I was earning more money than you could gamble at the time.
Mm.
Like, so it was never a problem. Do you know what I mean? At Arsenal, I wasn't on great money, so you were losing everything. When I went to Aston, I went to Middlesbrough, and then I went to Villa, and I was getting extraordinary money. Like, at that time, I was getting, like, you couldn't gamble the money away.
I don't understand. Could you? So you know. So was it about making money then? What was it? The risk reward? Was it? Was you trying to self harm? What was the? What was the reason why you wanted to lose everything?
I never had an understanding of money, from ever. Like, I always when you know, my best mate, he still gambles, and we years ago used to gamble together. He could never understand that I never used to go mad. Like, if he lost his money, he'd go ballistic.
Ah.
I never. And he still laughs to this day. It's like, he used to go, water off a duck's back, because I couldn't justify the money. I was playing football. I had the best job in the world. I was getting paid to play football, stay fit, be in fresh air every day of the week. And I was like, I don't earn this money. It's not, you know what I mean? I'm not going onto a building site or working in a mine or being a fireman or a policeman, like a job where you got to work hard. Do you know what I mean? This was like, I never had the appreciation of money. Mm. I couldn't justify it. So it was like, well, I haven't worked for it ever. I'm doing something I've wanted to do since I was a kid. You know, when I was growing up as a kid and I wanted to be a footballer, when I used to watch Match of the Day with my dad or the big match with Brian Moore, I never sat there and felt, I didn't even know they got paid. I just wanted to be a footballer. I didn't want to be a footballer because I wanted six toilets and five baths. Mm. And four cars and eight watches. I wanted to be a footballer because I wanted to play football. I love playing football. Yeah, and that was the thing. The money was like, you know, I've been a multimillionaire. I've been a millionaire and wanted to kill myself.
Mm.
The money's irrelevant. You know, it's the head. It's an inside job.
Is it like gambling tokens?
Oh, it's become Monopoly money in the end because you're betting on the phone. You're betting on the phone, oh, so you're not, you know, I never went in, I haven't been in a betting shop for, about 3 years ago, I used to go in every now and then, but I've been in a betting shop and sat in a betting shop all day for about 20 years.
Mm.
You know, I used to live in the betting shop 20, 30 years ago, lived in the betting shop. I'd even take the little one in the betting shop in a car seat and put them in the corner, you know, 29 years ago. You know, that's where it took me. But then it become gambling on the phone, just on the phone.
When did you stop playing football? What year?
You know what? Time flies, doesn't it? I got the sack at Walsall about 38 years of age, which was my biggest regret because I wasn't well. I was drinking and gambling like a maniac at the time. I was on my own. And I always wanted to be a football manager. Always wanted.
Oh, was you managing?
Managing Walsall.
Or was you just managing or playing manager?
I was player manager and I stopped playing. I concentrated on, but that was because of gambling and drinking. I become lazy.
Mm.
And I should have played. Still one of our better players, if I'm being honest. I'm not big-headed. And I just couldn't be arsed. You know, it started to drain me down then.
Mm.
You know, because now I'm not earning the money. Now I'm not earning the money to feed the addiction. Now I've got to lend money. Like I've got to use my brain and how am I going to get money? I'll lend money off him. And then when I get that and then I'll pay him and I'll lend it off him and I'll pay him. And then I went into an IVA involuntary agreement because the one thing with me, and I think everybody would agree, you know, who knows me, I pay back. Do you know what I mean? I've lost lots of money and I've had credit with people and I pay back. I'm not one of these who go, nah, I'm not paying.
So you've not lost friends because of...
No, always paid back. Always paid back. And I went into IVA because I couldn't afford to pay it at once and I paid like even credit cards and things like that when I could have easily just gone, no, that's it, I'm going belly up. And I wouldn't do that. I refused to do it. And I went into that and paid everybody back. But and then it started taking its toll. The money started, you know, I wasn't earning footballers' money anymore.
Mm.
But the bets were not getting smaller.
So in between, so sack from Walsall,
yeah.
So let's say early 2000s, maybe something like that.
Yeah, I was about 38. 38, I was then. I've been at Sky 14 years. About 14 years, I've been at Sky.
Mm.
So yeah, I was fortunate enough. I was sitting at home one day thinking, what am I going to do?
What did you do then between leaving Walsall then and Sky?
It come literally straight away.
Oh, really?
Virtually. It come not like on a consistent basis, but I worked and done some like...
Pundit stuff.
Yeah, pundit stuff. And I would do one Saturday every month and I might do a midweek. And then as time went on, I got a thing. But that was a release. That was like, that kept me, you know, like I was very fortunate. I know I was lucky because... When you finish playing football and, you know, and I just lost my job at Walsall, it's like going to Sky and working at Sky I was still involved. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I was with the lads. You know, you ask any player, when they retire, it's not the training Monday to Friday or the game, because you only retire because you can't play anymore. If you're any good, it's very rare you retire at the top. It's not like boxing where you've won every fight and you go, you know what, I'm going to retire. You only retire from football when you become shit. Very rare you leave at the top. And that was the situation. It was like, I used to miss the 15 minutes in the dressing room at the start and at the end of training when the lads would laugh and joke, you take the mickey out of each other. But I got that at Sky. You know, when I went to Sky and Matt Letizia, Jeff, Charlie, Tomo, I had that buzzy buzz still. It was like being in a dressing room. Yeah. And when you're an addict, you want to be, I need to be around that. I can't be on my own.
Mm.
But and then the show would finish. I'd go home and for the rest of the week, my life would be a wreck. It'd be a wreck till Saturday. And then I'd literally look forward to Saturday. I'd wait for Saturday to come. But in between that, I'd be drinking and gambling like a maniac.
Was that the only way of making income? Sky?
Yeah. 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 That was it. I was finished. I'd lost everything. I'd lost my pension. I'd lost everything.
Oh, really?
Oh, I got off of my pension in one hit at 35, which I find now, I look back now, I know people are going to go, oh, you're 30, but someone, when they offered me it, honestly, I would have bought them a holiday. You imagine offering an addict like
a lot of cash,
750 grand.
Oh, shit.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and I would have kissed their feet. Of course I would. I was an addict. I was full blown. Like, imagine getting that out of the blue. Like one day, just sitting there and someone rings you and goes, oh, you're due your pension, Paul. You can take it all in one hit if you want. What time? You know what I mean? I look back now, angry.
Mm.
In a way, I don't like being angry, but I look at it and I think they knew what I was. Everybody knew. Everybody knows. If you say Paul Merson, the footballer, Sky pundit, oh yeah, he has problems. Or he had problems. Yeah, I don't mind. That's the way it is. The problem that hurts me more than anything with that is someone made money out of giving me my money. So by giving me that early, I'd have had to have paid a surrender thing for it.
Mm.
And that was where I just find it a bit...
Well, someone's preyed on a vulnerability.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. You know, it's like, why would you even give...
Well, I think that's because, Paul, as well, you're such... You said earlier on that the thing was... evil, the addiction. Yeah. Bear with me on this one.
Yeah,
but you're not.
Yeah,
and you won't know this, right? So my mate Danny is one of my best mates. Lives in Widnes, and he got you to come to a lads' kind of rugby league do.
All right, yeah.
To speak,
yeah.
He said you were great and like very, you know. Perfect. And then he got you a year later to go to a fundraiser at Widnes, and he. It was his mum had got cancer and survived, and it was for Macmillan. And you went up and you met them all, and then you donated half your fee back to the charity.
Oh.
I was on the phone with him the other day, and he said that. Because I was thinking, when I read the book and the documentary, I was thinking that, does he think he's evil? And does he think he's bad? And do I think he's bad? And you just said then, oh, other people think of you. But I don't think that, I'm not sure if that's the case, because I've never thought about you in that way. And hearing today and hearing, actually, you want good things for people and you don't like injustice in people. And actually, a lot of it is you not taking, up until this point, is not taking control over your situation, which is what I want to get to a bit more of the documentary now. Because I think this is when you, and I don't, we met today.
Yeah.
You know my brother a little bit.
Yeah. Too much.
But you...
Joke.
You, the documentary, is that when you started taking some control over the situation?
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Since I'd done the programme and wrote the book, it's an eye-opener. I don't hate myself. I don't hate myself. I know I'm ill. I know I was an ill person. And that's why I've tried to get the message across to people, because you do. Of course you think you're a bad person. You keep on losing all the money. I mean, the last lockdown, you know, we saved up, and I have to save. You know, I don't get Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I have a good job at Sky. I have a great job. I don't get football wages. You know, when I was, you know, so I have to save up. I have to save. I've got kids. And I saved hard. We saved hard to get a deposit for a house. And I lost it all in lockdown. Like, and I mean a lot of money. And I hated myself with a passion. I was every week for, because I never told my wife at the time for the week, first week. And every time I looked at the kids, I thought, I hate myself. I let you down. I hate myself. And I honestly, it was blowing my head. Like my head was blowing up through it. And I told my wife and I hated myself with a passion. Today I don't hate myself with a passion. It was something that would have happened if I didn't, whenever it was going to be, if I didn't know what I was going to be. I just thought I was a bad person. I know now I'm an ill person. I know I have an illness. I know my brain searching for morphines. It's searching for that high of where I was as a footballer, and I keep on wanting that high. And I understand that now, and I don't hate myself. But I do things like this podcast, and I wrote the book, and I've done the documentary for people to understand that them people who are going through this, they're not bad people. They are ill. They are ill and they need to get help. They're not bad people who are trying to become good people. That's what I used to think. I used to think I'm a bad person, but if I keep on doing good things, I'll become a good person. But that's not the case. I'm not a bad person. I'm an ill person.
The good things, that you've always done the good things.
Yeah.
This illness. And as a society, we demonize addiction, but we also laugh at it, and we can't, a lot of the time we can't understand it. What part of, I don't know about recovery, because I think, is that a long going process, but what part of understanding is you being honest with yourself?
I very much so. I think you got to be honest with yourself. I mean, I think my main thing is living in the day. I try and really try to live in the day every day. I try to just live in the moment, not worry about yesterday's gone, it's gone. Whatever happens, gone. And tomorrow, I don't know what's going to happen, but my life has always been the other way around. I always worry about what I did yesterday, always thinking about what I did yesterday, and I'd piss on today. It'd just go by. It just, like, and that's the 89, the picture when we win the league. No moment there for me. No moment. My only moment's like, we ain't going to run out of drink, are we, on the way home? Do you know what I mean? And it's like, recovery is every day. You know, my biggest people I respect more than anybody in the world are addicts who are recovering, who get up in the morning and get through the day, whatever addiction they have, and they don't do it. And that's my biggest, I admire them people more than anything, because I know how hard it is. I know on a daily basis, and I don't mean on a daily basis where every day, but there's days when it's hard, and I mean hard. And the sad thing is, you know where it takes you, and there's still a part of you that who will go back there again.
Is life easier when you're gambling or when you're not gambling?
It's 100 times better when I'm not. 100 times. Oh yeah, 100 times. My life's, it's great. The odd thing is trying to get that, them like moments where it hasn't got to be gambling. Like it was 24/7. You imagine that high of scoring a goal, what I talked about earlier, for the last 36 years, maybe with a year here or a year there or 2 years here. It's always been buzzing my head. Always. And even if it's like I've lost everything, there's still that buzz of my head spinning round of, right, where do I get my next dollar from? Where do I get my next bet? Who can I borrow money off? How much would it cost to pay them back with if I lent that much money off that loan shark? And if I paid that one? And so now just being able to sit there with a clear head is I know this might sound a bit, it's hard because I've never had it. You know, I said to my wife the other day, my life's been like a roller coaster. It's just been, it's either been up here high in the sky or as low as you can get. And I've strived for 36 years to just, I call it just be normal. I don't know what normal is, but just to be normal where I haven't got that. And the other week I was sitting indoors and I was sitting on the sofa. My wife's very aware of my changes now. And she said, what's wrong? And I just said, I'm bored. Bored. She said, what do you mean? I said, I don't know. What is it? It's just, it's every day, isn't it? It's just get up in the morning, get the kids ready, take them to school, get them home, take them here, take them there, go to bed, get up in the morning. And she said, is it better than when like you was down here though, when you'd lost everything and you wanted to kill yourself? And I said, oh, it's 100 times better than that. They were thinking at them.
What gives you joy?
That's what I'm searching for, man. They're the things I'm searching for at the moment, like watching my boy play football, you know, being with a baby, being with my little girl, you know, football on a Sunday, football, taking my boy to watch him play football. They are. That's, you know, being with my wife and trying to show her love where I don't know what love is, if I'm being, you know, I find it hard. You know what I mean? Like, I see people and they're holding hands, walking along, and I'm like, fuck, what's the hell that about? Do you know what I mean? I've never been able to do that. And that's what I strive for.
Paul, thank you so much, mate, and we'll leave it there.
No worries, thank you.